It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Thunderstruck, we're not afraid here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Oh, even though silver went down to below 1780 today and below 1200 on gold, you know what that means? That means we should buy more! Buy more! It's all cheaper now and everything right after you what? Right after you buy some food and seeds and be able to sustain thy life. You know, it's got chickens. That's what you need. We're going to have to survive. Now, we have in studio Pam. Now, Pam is going to help us with understanding what can be done, what should be done. Pam Perry, she is a master gardener and chickens. So we're going to go ahead and spend the hour making sure we can milk her for everything that we can get some information out of. Because like today we have on, you know, on Freedom's Phoenix, it's up here for some reason. I'm not even sure why. How to harvest milk thistle. Well, I didn't even know I wanted to harvest them. You know, is that anything you know about? Are we supposed to harvest milk thistle?
Well, we could have harvested milk thistle in Phoenix about 2 months ago. And milk thistle, the seeds of the milk thistle plant is used, it's an herb used for a variety of health related concerns. We do grow milk thistle here in town, and it self-sows very readily.
Why am I, you know, who the heck put, oh, Barbara Peterson is one of our editors, and she does a lot on farm wars. I mean, she's all about on the farm and how they're, you know, the big bad guys are coming out, what you can and can't do with your own farm and land and animals and plants, and you know, because they're coming. So she's up here, and she put this up. I just happened to see it, you know, while prepping for the show, how to harvest milk thistle. I'm going, wow, that's really nothing I know about. So I'm going, you know, tell me, why would I even want to do that?
Well, if you had, and I'm not an herbalist, but I do know that the herbalists grow it, and they use the seed for a number of decoctions that are supposed to improve your health. If you are going to harvest milk thistle, I do suggest that you get yourself some long leather gauntlets, because this is one nasty little plant. It's got lots of thorns and lots. It's a thistle. It's a true thistle.
So it's going to, you know, it give you kind of little rashes on your arm. Because I've seen it before, you know, and you get up on it, it's kind of sticky.
It prickers. It's a mean. He doesn't intend to have anybody graze on him for sure. He wants to just send his seed out to the world and make more milk thistles. But if you do herbalistic kinds of treatments for various health reasons, it is a viable and fairly common. If you don't want to tackle this plant on your own in your garden and let him run wild, you can go to a health food store and find it already harvested in jars and buy it by ounces or quarter ounces. And
my experience with that has been, I tell you one time, I did a liver cleanse. Everybody's on my case. Got to do it. Okay, fine. So I went ahead and did it, I don't know, probably 6-7 months ago when we started doing the juicing thing. Yeah, here's my juicing thing. Okay. And it's, my wife does this for me in the morning, and I take one down here for my lunch. And the one thing that's interesting is that juicing, when you have, and what I do, it's real simple. I mean, it's carrots. It's Granny Smith apples and something green. I mean, I'll fill in the blank. I don't know. I don't care. You know, spinach,
kale, something.
You know, kale, yeah. Collard greens, something. Yeah. All right. So I put it in. I feel a lot better. I mean, I don't even think of food anymore. Before, I had a good day. I passed two Jack in the Boxes and didn't order one single sourdough Jack. I mean, you know, I was like, oh, now I don't even think about it. I'm like, yeah. So I feel a lot better. But I'll tell you. going through this, you start, okay, I'll try, you know, anything once, twice if I like it. Well, one of the things was that you went to an herbalist or you went to a health food store and they have, it's like an Eye of Newt thing or something. I mean, you got 15 gazillion things out there in a cauldron with somebody over their stern or whatever, you know. So, and it's Town and Country Mall. It's a nice, you know, place over there. I can't remember what it was called, but... Yeah, Shara, whatever the heck it is. And they have all these different things. I said, look, on the internet, for me to do this, I need to get something that would take away the parasites for kidney and liver. You want to make sure you're getting some the bad stuff dead before you start cleaning out stuff. So I need this kind of root, de la, whatever. All I remember was marshmallow mm-hmm. root or something. And then there was some other mushroom thing and blah, 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 blah. So you do that for a week. Okay, fine. Now you're ready to do your other thing and you do it. Well, I, you know, didn't hurt. I feel better. So I'm like, okay, no pain, you know, so I'm good. The thing is that, you know, you're not really in the herbal stuff as much as you are just getting some good food gardening, you know, health through, give me some decent vegetables.
Okay? Absolutely. That green stuff you're going to put in that juicer.
Right. So let's go ahead and talk. Now, I have not on purpose. I haven't talked to Pam one word before the show. She's been sitting here in half hour looking at me, you know, playing computer and talking to people and getting stuff done. And the reason is because it's no fun when we talk and we already know everything and it's just like an inside joke and you don't get anything. So what I'm going to do as an audience, so for the audience, I'm going to ask questions that I think that they would ask, you know, and things that, you know, we can go on, we can learn something. You, in your bio, you're like, you know, graduate of the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, University of Vermont. You've worked in all kinds of different things, anywhere from growing gardens, teaching on television, working at large resorts and making their landscape look pretty and all kinds of stuff. So green thumb, probably both of them, okay? So now what we're going to do is we're on this show, we talk a lot about gardening, raising chickens and everything for one purpose. It's not really to, you know, because they're pretty or not or for grins and giggles, so we don't die, okay?
Yes.
It's for health. It's for sustenance. It's for, you know, surviving the apocalyptic, you don't got no food kind of thing. You know, so we're trying to learn, even though we're in Phoenix, you know, a metropolitan desert area, where a lot of times here it's different than a lot of the rest of the country, we get too much sun, you know. Where I mean, you're growing stuff, man. It's like, you get, yeah, put it under something. We're growing our plants inside. We're in our garage. Well, maybe not that bad. But, you know, but the point is that, you know, we've learned, just me and my wife, that, wow, man, we're, especially tomato plants and stuff like that, you know, the sun just beat the crap out of them. So we want to try and make it more general so that a lot of the audience doesn't live in, you know, the Southwest. You know, we have them in the Eastern, you know, see, was like North Carolina and Tennessee and Florida and Oregon and Utah and, you know, all over the country, Tennessee. You know, we have people all over the country, so we need to keep the information more general than what we would do here in Arizona. And you've been around the country, so we can do that. How much, this is the first question that I would have, if you have a backyard that, let's say it's like 30 by 60 feet, okay, you know, kind of your suburban, small, cookie cutter house, you know, downtown, kind of got yourself a little yard, how much more or even less than that do you need to sustain, let's say, two people? How much can you grow? What are you going to have to supplement it with? How many goats you got to have? I mean, you know, how much surviving with the technology that we have now, with all of the, you know, little goodies and so on, how small of a plot do you need that you can up enough stuff? Because we get enough tomatoes here. I mean, you can can. You have tomatoes for the rest of your freaking life, you know? So, I mean, what is the best food? What is, I'm thinking about surviving. I want to keep breathing that in and out for a few years, and I go through one growing season. How much land do I need to be able to sustain myself?
I can't honestly answer that specifically. Part of it is going to depend on how much of your extracurricular time you have to put into this project.
Oh, no, I have a, you know, my spouse, my kid, my somebody, my other, my significant.
Somebody's full time.
My significant other is sitting there, they're worshiping in the backyard, make sure we don't die.
Okay.
Okay, I'll give you that. Full time, we don't die.
It's a trick of working within each climate, wherever you're living. I mean, here in Phoenix, we're really lucky. We can plant and harvest something different every week of the year, and keep a revolving flow of fresh vegetables coming into our kitchen. there are regions of the country where winter comes, and if you haven't gotten it into either canning jars or into a freezer, or you haven't dried it and preserved it in some way, you're SOL till the sun shines and the snow melts and the ground thaws. So it really is dependent how you go about it, depending on where in the country you are. So if you're in the Northeast, you're looking at a garden that starts end of May, beginning of June, and will be all wrapped up and put away somewhere and put down, as they say, by the end of October. If you're in the Midwest, it's much the same. You get a little longer lead time on either end. California, we can go, depending on where in California. Southern Cal, they can pick and harvest and plant.
You know what we'll do is we'll take the worst case scenario and we'll put where people are in the snow. Because here I know, man, we got more stuff than we know what to do with here. But and we'll talk about that a little bit. But you guys pay attention because I want to know how much can we sustain ourselves living in a climate that has seasons. We'll talk about it. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Me, Ernest Hancock. Oh, and we're learning how to survive from Pam Perry. Now, she's a master gardener and knows about chickens. So I'm just gonna keep asking her a bunch of questions, and hopefully we'll try and use some place like Ohio, kind of Midwestern. We got seasons, okay? So we have seasons, and we're looking at probably in some climb like that, you're probably planting when? April, May, something?
May into June.
I mean, it's a short season, man.
It is a short season. So things like have to work really hard.
So that's like one crop?
Yeah, pretty much.
Here in Arizona, you get how many? A billion?
You know, we're cool here. We can plant and harvest 365 days of the year if we want to. I've got bean sprouts this high. Just put them in last week. And I'm so excited.
For radio, that was about 2 or 3 inches high.
I'm real broken. That's real helpful, isn't it?
See, so it's hard to use Arizona as an example because it's here. A lot of people don't know. Here in Arizona, we are always number 2 or number 3 in, at least we were, in orange citrus production. We're number 1 in cotton. We're number 1 in all kinds of stuff because add water, grow, okay? And you have sunshine all the time. You have, fertile land that you just, you add water and it went,
Stuff grows, absolutely.
So Arizona, you even look at our state seal, and it has a agricultural aspect to it, mining, agriculture, that kind of thing. And the reason is because, man, they found out add water, and the indigenous people back in the day, they had the canal system here that they would take from the Salt River that runs through Phoenix. That's why Phoenix is here. Well, what they did back in the late 1800s and so on, Wickenburg, which is a small community about, 50 miles northwest, it's past Sun City here in the valley. That was the big city of the time, and Prescott and so on used to be the state capital because of silver, okay? So silver and gold and mining. Well, then you start having bigger and bigger communities. So I can't remember the guy's name, but, they teach you in school. You always get the Arizona history thing. They came out with the mules and started dredging all the old Indian canals. So when they did that, they, had the water and so on, and agriculture. Ooh, guess what? Phoenix would be making some water. Then, of course, they do wells, and then you have dams. And then all of a sudden Arizona becomes, oh my goodness, we make a lot of food. And what you see in Southern California, they're desert too. What they did? They just added water too. So they go, California, it's so beautiful and it has no
land of milk and honey.
Yeah, but it was in freaking desert just like Arizona.
Absolutely.
They just added water. So that is the one thing, water is a big deal here. So we can't really use Arizona as a mean, it's not
prototype.
Really, it's not really a good example. So we're pretty good here. As long as you got water, we're going to be just fine. But let's go ahead and for the audience that doesn't have the benefit of living in Arizona, so we're having to maximum produce during a one season that's going to be like 5-6 months.
Yeah.
Okay? So we're going in. What is the most nutritious foods? If I had one thing to do, I mean, we planted a bunch of carrots. So we just go carrot. Come to find out that carrots is like, you know, it's all around, give me what fur. So if you were to pick something, you know, but we got to be careful. The Irish did that with potatoes, and look what happened.
Okay? Exactly. You don't want to single crop anything. And when you're planning for the future, you want to get some fruit trees in. And you work with your local cooperative extension. They can help you locate varieties that are real successful wherever you are in the country.
Local cooperative extension.
Yeah.
Explain that.
Well, the land-grant universities, the one we pay that our taxes support, have an extension program county by county throughout the United States. And they have a great deal of education for both agriculture and urban horticulture concerning what grows best. They can help you with varieties. They can help you with growing seasons and soil temps. It's really a dynamic organization throughout the United States. And it is a resource that is available to anybody who goes in and types in whatever their home state cooperative extension .edu and hits go, and something is going to pop up.
And okay, I got here cooperative extension system offices, blah, 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 blah. I put it in here, and you just click on the state. Okay, got it. We're going to go ahead and put this on this show's archive. So when you go in, you can see what she's talking about, and I'll just go ahead and have that up there. Now, this is a product of the Department of Agriculture or something?
Taxpayers fund our land-grant universities throughout the United States. There's 50 land-grant universities.
What does land-grant university mean?
Taxpayer-funded university. And if you look at a University of Arizona, there is a certain amount of funding that comes from the federal and the state to support that university.
Okay.
And one of the deals on getting that money is that the education through research and experimentation that is learned at those universities is to come back to the taxpaying public. And so we have, and it is delivered county by county so that it is very specific to the needs of the people living and asking the questions. And we here have the Maricopa County Cooperative Extension offices.
Okay, now I put it on there. You go to today's archive and you'll see the link. And then just click right in. It says cooperative, whatever the heck she said. Yeah, cooperative extension. So I go in there and I click on Arizona. And it says, all right, Arizona comes up. And then click on a county. So I click on Maricopa. And it comes up Maricopa. And let's see, new desert landscape, blah, 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 blah. And I go in and I can ask all kinds of questions. What crops, when, scheduling, whatever.
And there's also a food and nutrition side of this coin, where they will give you the latest and greatest information on safe and healthy canning techniques if you're looking at doing some canning to preserve your vegetables, or how to dry things, or other storage ways, whether you're doing freezing. You can get the safest and most recent research to help you get the best nutrition out of what you're saving and storing. So it isn't just the growing aspect of this, but we also have the preserving and the putting food by.
And pesticides.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, this is how the pet. Okay, whatever. All right, so I go ahead and I put in here the kind. Now, instead of me just going here, I mean, do you have like a favorite vegetable or something that's going to produce the most nutrition for someone?
In the winter months in Arizona, so this would work in in the Midwest and the Northeast, and it works during the summer and into the fall. If you're in a milder climate, it'll go into the winter. I love the dark leafy greens, the spinaches and kale. Kale is high in calcium, an important thing for us women folk and our bones. Kale is probably one of the most underutilized vegetable. It's got a bad rap. People pick it old and cook it forever, and it's no fun at all. But if you grow your own kale and harvest it young and tender and cook it quickly, it doesn't have that rank, old, cabbagey, stale thing going on at all. But it's really, and it could juice for you and your little jar sitting over here.
Yeah, no, we do. My wife uses kale. We grow it ourselves, and you can just pick it right off and
pick
eat
it. And pick it.
The big mistake that I found out in a lot of the vegetables that we use is that when we do the vegetables, there is kind of a range of time when you want to get it. You know, for example, I love radishes, okay? So we put the radishes in, and they start growing. It hits about 3 weeks after they sprout. You know, you start eating them, and they got a nice little spice to them, and they're good and everything. Yeah, let them get a little bigger. Hey, go another month or so. You go and you got this nice big radish, and it tastes like crap. Okay?
Yes. Young and tender are the watchwords. If you're growing your own, you don't get stuck with what.
Well, they were smaller than what I was used to getting them at the store. So I go like, nah, let them get a little bigger. And then they get kind of woody and they're yuck. So then I realized that radishes grow freaking fast.
Yeah, they do.
You put them in 3 weeks, man, it's time to have some radishes. So here, that's another thing. You're not planting every crop all at one time. You're kind of doing it in stages. So you're harvesting them in stages,
exactly.
Too.
Exactly. And on that extension website, if you're in Arizona, you will find a vegetable planting calendar. That won't work anywhere else in the country.
No, that's what I was looking for. That's what I found. I'm like, okay, I got it. So and I put that in there. It goes to the national one. So those listening, you can find by county in your area.
Exactly.
And sometimes like things like lettuce, if you go too late, it doesn't taste the same. There's a window for each of these, and that's where you get that kind of information I wish I had before. More when we come back. You stay right there.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we're back in the saddle again here on Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com, where we have in studio, Pam Perry is, helping us out here, understanding, because this is, I keep saying this, a lot of people said, before you go buying silver, even though it's going down now, you should buy some more. But you can do whatever you want. But so I'm going, because it may dump down even more, but someday. So what happens is I'm before you even start getting into trying to preserve wealth or, ride this thing out, that's right after you got some food in your house, under your bed, chickens in the backyard, whatever it takes, because it's going to get to where, let me tell you what's going to have a whole bunch of value, whatever keeps you breathing in and out. I mean, that's what it comes down to. So Pam is helping us with where we can get some of the information to be able to sustain ourselves. Well, it's called Cooperative Extension Programs. What do you call it? It's called Cooperative what?
Cooperative Extension, and it's through your land-grant university in whatever state you're in, and it's county-driven. So if you are in Sandusky, Ohio, you check and find out what county Sandusky is in, and you can pull up Sandusky, Ohio Cooperative Extension Office, and they have for you all kinds of information about home horticulture and gardening and canning and freezing and safely preserving. They have small animal information, which would cover your chickens and maybe ducks and geese and turkeys and rabbits. There are places you can actually raise rabbits. Phoenix isn't real good rabbit raising country. Too hot. So wherever you're, whether you're in South Florida or down in Louisiana, or I think they even have them in Alaska.
Yeah, you got aquaculture here, animal well-being, animal nutrition. That's another thing. I don't know if you get into this. I'm a lawbreaker, okay?
Okay.
I'm just getting every chance I get.
Okay.
One of the things is you have feed stores here that if you have people that have farms or animals, or you got a sick horse, or your pigs need antibiotics, or your turkeys, whatever, you go to the feed store and they got penicillin, tetracycline, all kinds of goodies there. I buy it, let me say, and I go to my pharmacist and I go, well, what's the difference between this and this one over here for humans? They go, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, well, what, can I just buy it and put it in my refrigerator? And they go, yes.
Yeah.
And I'm going, well, does that break the law? I don't know. Didn't look. Don't care.
Okay.
So this is, you have all this information up here. You might be able to go, and you're an animal, so animal health, animal nutrition, animal reproduction, animal well-being, animal, I need, medicine. Well, guess what? A lot of that stuff applies. It's called Wikipedia.
Wikipedia, sure.
So the thing is that I want to share that with the audience because, that is, what if we go all apocalyptic and everything gets all bad and such, guess what I'm going to go get? I'm going to get me a bunch of antibiotics from the feed store, put it in my refrigerator, freezer, cellar, whatever the heck, and I got currency.
You might.
You know, I mean, this is, oh, but that might be against the law. You think that might be against the law? Don't care. So anyway, so we have, so you go to, you just type in, what was it that we put in? Cooperative Extension. Now, this is a National Institute of, you know, well, you got Department of Agriculture's link to, off from there and so on. So it's a United States federal government thing. And I would bet that this is, I don't know, because they love us.
You know? It's because they collect our tax dollars, and somebody made them sign on the dotted line they'd have to give us something back.
This is as good as anything. So, you know, here we go. But, you know, I would imagine that a lot of this information is certainly in. That's where we have Farm Wars. Barbara Peterson writes for Freedom's Phoenix, and, you know, she has a lot of access to this kind of information, too. But this is good that they're doing it by county, and, yeah, they got tax dollars, so let's get some back. So, you have this information. I go in and I decide. And one question I have before we get to the next break is I want to know, you know, you're a big fan of kale. You know, you think that has a lot of nutrition value. Mm-hmm. But and I tell you, when we did the juicing thing, it's called the Gerson therapy, and it's a long story went through. I've been doing this for probably about 7 months, and I feel a lot better. I mean, I don't drink it because a health nut or this or that, or I've got any other reason other than, you know, my self-interest is, you know, very selfish. I mean, I'm a libertarian, man. I do it all for me. It's all about me. You know, I'm not trying to save the environment. I'm not trying to, you know, do whatever. I'm trying to feel better. I feel better. Guess what? It wins. Okay. In here is carrots, green apples, and usually kale or collard greens. So the advocacy that they give is that a combination of those foods, for some reason, it has all kinds of, you know.
It's a vitamin pill in a jar. It's got all kinds of great and accessible nutrients for your poor little body.
But what else would you, and why? I mean, you know, so carrots is great because what?
They've got beta carotene in them. They've got all those. I think they're one of the antioxidants. Kale is an antioxidant. So you're getting a diverse collection of nutrition that's going to help your body.
Well, I mean, where does it, you know, like carrots, okay, I never saw a rabbit with glasses, okay, I get it, you know. But the thing is that the carrot is so good because it's not, it covers what? Is there proteins in here? Are we getting?
You're not getting much protein from this collection. It's okay. Mostly vitamins and nutrients. Your protein sources would be legumes, your beans, your peas in various stages of collection, lima beans, sweet peas. This time of year, we can be planting our pinto beans. We can plant, if you're gardening in Phoenix, we can plant our tepary beans now. These are the ones that sustain the Native Americans and still do in places. I've got yard long beans, which is an oriental.
So what is a good combination for me? You know, let's go ahead and keep it in the Midwest, so we're kind of doing a season. We got to get maximum.
Oh, they're planting pole beans. They can have Blue Lake or Kentucky Wonders. They can do the red burgundies. They can plant the string beans.
Beans
is good.
Okay, so so this is the question that I have. If I got a, you know, limited amount of, I'm just, you know, mm-hmm. I got limited skills, man. I want to mass produce and get me all kind of making it through the next year. Mm-hmm. I'm storing, I'm drying, I'm preserving, I'm cooking, I'm whatever I'm doing. I'm going to go in and I say, you know, I have half an acre, let's say. Half an acre, can you take a half acre and produce enough that'll put you through the winter? Get you to the next.
Probably. Okay. If you work very hard, and like any farmer, I mean, farming's a risky business whether you're doing, you know, 40,000 acres or 400,000 acres or 0.4 of an acre.
If I'm out of a job, I got a whole bunch of time. Okay?
Time is part of it.
So, I mean, you know,
you got time to learn and experiment.
I'm thinking there's a whole bunch of people out there listening, thinking they're not going to have a choice, okay? So I'm for you guys.
This is a good thing.
This is information for you guys.
This is a good thing. We kept the country together during World War II and World War I with those little victory gardens.
Yeah,
you know.
No, in the Great Depression, you know, the people, that's why, I tell you, it's been a year and a half that I've had chickens.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, heck yeah. If I would have known chickens were this easy and produced this, maybe I would have done that a long freaking time
cool?
ago.
Chickens are just great fun.
I love chickens. This is cool. And they're, you know why they're easy? Because I don't, you know, I like them because they're easy. I don't have to do anything. They're like, you know, feed them, water them, kind of, you know,
collect the eggs.
Yeah, kick them out of the way, you know.
Put them in the stew pot when they quit producing.
Yeah, and, you know, they're, you know, I might free them. And Be free, be free. And here come the coyotes.
Yeah, that's
whatever. You know, you got to give them a chance. So here we have a rounded garden. I'm planting probably carrots.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have me some carrots. I'm going to have me some radishes because I like them. That's just the way it is.
Little lettuce won't hurt you either.
Okay, why lettuce?
Lettuce is full of vitamins.
Okay, so we're getting a lot of vitamins out of lettuce.
Yeah, it dresses up a sandwich in fresh lettuce and turkey. I mean, what more do you want, right?
You know, what we do is that's where we started to learn. We would take and do our salads and our vegetables for, like, sandwiches and stuff like that. We just go out and just pick them off of the plants.
Eat them fresh.
And eat them right there. Put them on.
It tastes different, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, until it gets to a certain point, and then it has, like, that, you know, milk thistle-y taste. Kind of bitter.
Yeah, exactly.
That bitter
taste. Time to put the lettuce in the compost and start the next crop.
Is it a season thing? Is it a time thing? You know, or is it just like here, you could, if you rotated the planting, you would always have a stage that you're having good eating lettuce?
No, not in Phoenix. Lettuce does not like hot. In Phoenix, well, we all know what happens in May.
It gets really hot.
It does. I let some lettuce go. I had some pretty little butterheads that I didn't quite get eaten this year. And I was going to get them in the compost pile. I went out of town and I came back and they were 4 feet high and they had the prettiest blue flowers on them. And they were real entertaining. And now they're in the compost pile and I have basil planted there and some sage. So
I'm a big basil fan.
Oh, basil never. Now, when you talk hot, basil and hot go hand in hand. And you can get basil in sweet basil and spicy basil and cinnamon basil and lemon basil and lime basil. And the basils keep going and going and going. And so they become one of my salad greens in the summer. Lettuce doesn't like it hot. We'll start planting lettuce again in September.
I tell you, basil is... I owned a pizza restaurant, okay? So I like cooking. Do a lot of sauces and so on. So I got really at basil.
Good stuff.
It gives you kind of an organic taste and a sweet taste without using a bunch of sugar. And it has its own thing. So I had basil on my bathroom windowsill by the window. Basil. Babe, we're going to talk about basil, my love affair with it, when we come back.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. Or the times, they are a-changing.
Yeah, they are a-changing. And, well, they're changing too. I don't know, but I just want to survive it and keep going, breathing in and out. That's my whole thing, you know, and what helps doing that is having some good nutrition. And as a country, we're starting to learn that. I tell you this, you know, the more I learn and we have, you go to freedomsphoenix.com and you'll see on the horizontal navigation bar at the top, on the second line of that, it says special editions. And you go to Ernie's favorites. And I put, you know, even though we have a lot of turnover, a lot of news stories and so on, that's on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix. But every now and then I'll see some cool stuff. I'll go, we'll just leave that. And we'll put it on my site there. And one of them is sugar, the bitter truth, high fructose corn syrup. Okay. And the graphic is funnier than heck, man. It has this giraffe that's really fat. You'll never look at a giraffe again, you know, the same after you see this. But it gives an explanation of how high fructose corn syrup is just, you know, really jacking us up. And what I do is I really make a conscious effort not to get anything with high fructose corn syrup if I can help it. You know, I'll have, like, I got some little peppermint, you know, these old candies that, you know, it's just sugar my grandma used to have. I'll suck on these every now and then. But the, you know, it's hard candy or something like that. Say, you mean sugar? Oh, what a concept. Well, now what are they doing? They're starting to go throwback Pepsi. They're going to real sugar Pepsi, real sugar Mountain Dew. Of course, the whole thing's probably half sugar, but, you know, they're going back
to
sugar.
It's all for marketing.
Yeah.
It's all for marketing.
Well, of course it is, because people are going, I don't want high fructose corn syrup.
Well, corn syrup's becoming the bad guy here in
good. So this is, you're looking at a change in the marketplace because they are saying, you know, they're seeing links between obesity and whatever, you know. And we put that up, that YouTube that we have is, I always wanted to explain. Somebody explained to me why. It's bad. Why? Well, I don't know. Well, I want to know. It's because high fructose corn syrup, corn is broken down like ethanol. It is like a, it's like drinking alcohol. And it has, that's why you got corn mash for making moonshine, you know, that kind of thing. And it's broken down differently than sugars are. Sugar is broken down into a carbohydrate, you know, which is kind of, you know, so you, it's a different, totally different thing. It may taste sweet, may give you the impression of sweetness, but your body sees it totally differently. And it doesn't shut down your hunger thing. You have one throwback, you know, the mountain of sugar in your Pepsi, you're not hungry anymore. Remember the kids, your mom used to say, don't drink soda, you'll spoil your dinner.
You'll spoil your appetite.
You know, you won't eat anything for dinner. Well, because she was right. Well, the industry said, well, not a problem. We'll just put high fructose corn syrup and they'll want to drink that and eat. You know, it's all good. Go to McDonald's, have a nice big meal, and you're hungry, you know.
10 minutes later.
Yeah, as you're eating. I mean, you know, so this is, there was a reason for this. It's a, you know, how much can they get into you, get you to buy? Well, of course, it made us fat, it made us unhealthy, and, you know, and I'm juicing. All right. So I go, okay. So now I go to the supermarket and you see things like even ketchup. High fructose corn syrup, free ketchup.
Yeah. It's the great follow-up to the fat-free and the carbohydrate-free episode in our dietary mayhem.
And none of that, you even know what the heck it means. You know, you got saturated and unsaturated fat. I want, I'm not sure, which one do I want? I mean, you know, it's a high, try, this. You know, nobody understands. They're not teaching anybody. Nobody, but I tell you what they do understand. Raw. Organic. I go, you know what came out of my backyard?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I know what went in it. I know where it came from, and I knew what I put on it.
And it came, and it said, and it tastes yummy.
Because you're harvesting fresh, and it doesn't lose anything. The sugar, the natural sugars in the vegetables don't become starches, so it tastes better.
You know, that was one thing that we did. It was about the year 2000, 2001. Our children were in junior high about. I have four kids, 20 to 24 now, two boys, two girls. And we grew a house that we had moved into, already had, like, you know, raspberries. It had grapevines. All of a sudden, it's spring, and you got these vines going through the trees everywhere. And all of a sudden, grapes are starting to pop out. You got raspberries all over. You had some fruit trees. And, you know, pomegranates. I mean, you know, we're going, wow, man, this is like a freaking jungle back here. So we said, all right, well, we'll go ahead and do a little garden. That's when we started finding out what the sun did. And we go back there and we make all these foods. We have tomatoes, we have carrots, we have, just so our children could get a imprint on their brain what vegetables are supposed to taste like.
And what they're supposed to look like.
It's not even in the same ballpark.
In the grocery store.
Not even, I mean, in the grocery store, what's the thing they focus on?
Simply appearance. Blemish-free appearance.
Appearance.
And size. It's always bigger is better. I mean, one of the biggest questions people have for me is, when do I harvest? And it's like, when do you need it for dinner? Whether you harvest your baby eggplants at 2 or 3 inches, or whether you, they don't have to become those mega eggplants that you see in the grocery.
Yeah, 50 pounds.
I mean, how many meals out of that eggplant do we really need to have? But I can harvest and grill little baby eggplants, and they look positively delicate, and they taste so good. And in as much as eggplants in Phoenix, anyway, are terribly successful, it manages the population. They're worse than zucchinis, you know.
What do you mean?
Oh, they're prolific. Oh, yeah, well, highly successful.
Well, you know, we had eggplants and zucchini. They get big.
They get big.
I mean, they get huge.
If you don't pick them.
And my wife, she uses the zucchini for zucchini bread.
Sure.
And it's yummy. Well, what happened was we had a Christmas party here last year. And at the Christmas party, somebody brought, it was like a 50-pound eggplant. You know, I mean, it's enormous, and it was curved. In fact, the board up here, Jet, you know, he's like a almost 300-pound guy. He was riding as a saddle. I mean, he's sitting as like a saddle. You know, I mean, this is enormous. So I'm going, you know, maybe not that big, and it probably doesn't taste any better anyway. You feed a family with it of 15, but you know, this is, we're looking at not necessarily because it's big, but when do you have the maximum nutrition generally on most vegetables? I mean, once it starts to
take shape, and the vegetable is the means of protecting the seed inside. So it's going to be good for consuming until that seed starts to really get ripe, at which point the energy is going fully into the seeds, I think. So what you want to catch is when he – I just look at him and go, ooh, sweet and tender, you know, not quite done yet. Because the whole idea, the plant's object in making the vegetable is there's seeds inside. And the plant, wants to make seed. I mean, that's the flower, the whole business with flowers. You have pistils and stamens and pollen, and things get pollinated, and then there's seed, so there will be more plants in another generation. And this, they're totally programmed for this. Some of them are annuals and do it within a couple short seasons. Some of them are more perennial, and they will do it year after year. I have eggplants that are 3 years old. This is kind of scary. Lettuce is one of those annual ones. It wants to make grow, make flowers, make seed, and then it dies. And so you harvest your lettuce when it's really young and tender, long before it starts thinking about becoming a parent.
You know, we have so many plants, and they were doing, and we could not eat them all, mm-hmm. to where, yeah, they get to the point that they weren't good anymore. Yeah. So we would have, we finally just, you know, plowed under the garden, and my wife started doing square foot gardening, you know, kind of in potted plants, and she could move them around and get them in and out of the sun and shade and so on, because that became a problem. It's such a big deal with the sun, it's easier to move them around
than build whole shade structures. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we did. We had this, yeah. you know, kind of a dome PVC pipe, mm-hmm. and then we'd have, you know, like a watering system, and we got all into it. The problem was is that we were too productive.
Exactly.
There was way too much work for what we were, you know, able to use out of it. So we're going, okay, lesson learned. Yeah, well, you know, we can, you know, we need to, I don't know, have more babies or goats or something. So what happens is, I know my wife right now, if she's listening, she goes, she's going, ask her the question.
And the question is?
Pollen. When we do the tomato plants right now, I don't think she did seeds. I think she just did little seedlings, you know, put them in there. So she has the tomato plants, man, there they're going. Well, they weren't flowering. Okay, then all of a sudden they start flowering. Well, you know, she's waiting for them to, you know, kind of start produce tomatoes. And the only way, I guess, you have one or two plants, can they produce a tomato if they don't have they got to be pollinated from another.
They can be, they're self-pollinating.
Okay, a tomato plant pollinates itself.
Exactly. Now, what you have to be aware of, and this goes anywhere in the country, a tomato plant sets fruit. It'll start blooming when the days get a little longer and it's got its roots settled and it's grown enough. It'll start to bloom, but it will only start setting tomatoes when our nighttime temperatures are consistently above 55 degrees. And then the daytime temperatures have to remain below 95 degrees. There's a window there. And if your nighttime temperatures are a little chilly, that tomato is going to be a little sulky, and he isn't going to set much fruit. Or, as we all know here in Phoenix, once we hit triple digits, it ain't setting no more tomatoes. End of story. We just wait till fall. So you have to get your tomato plant planted in the ground early enough that he'll become a nice, big, luxurious, healthy plant, but not so early that you're going to lose him to a frost. And this is a frost date. We're February here. Other places are June or May or April. So that's where your cooperative extension tells you about your planting dates.
Oh, that.
There we go again.
Now I know everything I need to know about tomatoes. Honey, we've been screwing up, man. They're not going to go this summer. That's just the way it is. We have to bring them inside.
Oh, no. You leave them out there. You might put a little shade over them.
I don't know. It's 110, man.
Mine are doing, in fact. Mine have actually set fruit. I was so amazed to see baby tomatoes under my
shade. Well, they're starting
block.
To get the tomatoes, but when we come back, I'm going to hold Pam over because I want to talk about insects. You know what I mean? How are we losing the bees? Are they there? Because I haven't seen that much. I mean, there's something going on. Maybe she knows more about it than certainly more than I do. We're going to find out here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Pam Perry. Pam Perry, Master Gardener, and Chicken Razor. She can tell us about her chickens, too. We'll be right back.